Blog Talk Radio.
Of Suspense Radio one-on-one here November 1st 2015. Yes, I am amazed just like you. It also, it is already November 1st. Halloween has just passed and now we get to go to the malls and all we see is going to be Christmas, and that poor holiday Thanksgiving will now be forgotten, except by me. That is my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving, maybe because I like to eat so much, so I am a big turkey fan. So we got two great guests for you today. We are actually Suspense Radio 1-on-2. First, we are going to have author Jay Amper talking about his book, Bone Box. And next, we are going to have Robert Downs about Liqueur's Destiny. So let's just jump right into our first guest. He is author Jay Amper. His book is called Bone Box. So, Jay, we want to thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good, just taking a drink early here, 7:30 in the morning in Los Angeles, getting up a little early, got some stuff got to do today. So I want to thank you for coming on so early and talking about your book here, Bone Box. We know that you're kind of now in the middle of your Partners in Crime tour that's going on, which, of course, we are a tour stop for them. So let's just jump right into your book, Bone Box, and give everybody a little taste of what you got going on in there.
Bone Box is a suspense thriller. It is set in Turkey. I originally went to Turkey to do research, thinking about half the book would be set there, set here, actually. I'm back in Turkey now doing more work. But when I got to Istanbul, I liked it very much. And then I went to the area around Ephesus, which is on the Aegean, where the archaeological site that the story centers on is. And then finally I visited Cappadocia, which is an area more in central Turkey, and that just took my breath completely. And so I landed up setting the entire novel in Turkey.
And So you're in Turkey right now talking to us. That I did not know. That's really cool.
Yes, I'm talking to you in Turkey. The sun has just set here as it comes up there.
And so, you know, Turkey, of course, is one of those countries that, a lot of Americans have not been to. You hear good things. You hear bad things from that part. So you said that you got there and, you had the inspiration. But what was it specifically that got you to this book? Because it's very, it's very religious in setting. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of historical things going on. So what was it just about it? Was it the whole, was it the area? Was it the people? Did you just feel this wonderful connection? Give us a little more insight into that.
Well, I started the story with a question, which was, what would happen if documents were discovered that might well change, alter our sense of what happened 2,000 years ago? And so I knew that it was going to involve an archaeological site. And one of the things that I had read about in my early research was that St. John the Apostle had taken Mary, the mother of Jesus of Nazareth, to Asia Minor and to this area on the Aegean. And he had done that because historically Jerusalem was chaos at that point. It was before the Romans sacked the city, but it was when all of those events were starting. And so I just got to thinking about, well, what would have happened once they were there and how that might affect the story of Christianity going forward.
And what exactly then is the bone box? What is, I guess, is it a relic? Is it, is it a piece of history? What exactly is it?
A bone box is an ossuary, and the ossuaries were obviously stone boxes in which first century Jews reburied their dead, which is key to the story. It's not that the dead were buried there. It's that their bones, their remains, were then placed in this. And this particular bone box that's discovered at the archaeological site has the name on it, Jesus of Nazareth. And so the fact that bones were reburied in it poses a lot of possible questions. And it turns out there's also documents that were saved in this. Now, there's nothing in the story that actually shows that it was, in fact, the bone box that Jesus of Nazareth would have been buried in. But the characters in the story are all responding differently to the possibility that this particular ossuary has been discovered.
Now, of course, with many historical books and historical fiction thrillers like you've written here, the reader always likes to know what part of it is factual and then what part of it is fictional. Now, can you give us a little insight into what part of that is factual, and then, you know, you kind of fictionalize the story around it?
Yeah, the there is, of course, no tremendous historical evidence that Mary and John the Apostle landed up here, but there are various stories that have come down through the last two millennia. And very near the archaeological site is a current site that the Catholic Church has decided was the House of Mary. And it's now a holy site that hundreds of thousands of people, Catholics from around the world, visit. And the Pope has said, not this particular Pope, but previous popes have said masses there. And so there's that much. It's not exactly fact. The other part where the actual archaeological site is St. John's Cathedral. And St. John's Cathedral is on a hillside in Selçuk, which is a town very near Ephesus. And that really was the place that turned the story for me, because when I visited this cathedral, I could look up the hill at a Seljuk Turk fortress. I was standing among the ruins of a Christian cathedral, and as I looked down the hill, there was a mosque. It's a newer mosque. It's from like the 15th century. And then there was the Greek Temple of Artemis, and then Ephesus, and then the Aegean Sea. So in that moment, I was literally standing in the entire history of Western civilization, and it just sort of made the whole story gel.
Now, again, I want to remind everybody we're speaking here with author Jay Omberg, and if you can go to his website, Jay Omberg, AMBERG, .wordpress.com to find out more information, of course, about the book Bone Box. And you have a lot of good history that's included kind of in here. And when you're writing an international thriller like this, I mean, it's going to be, and Christianity, of course, is all over the world. So it's going to be many different countries and many different people are going to be interested in this. Have you noticed that in certain parts of the country, or have you gotten any backlash from anything? Because, you know, whenever you write something that's a little off kilter, people tend to maybe come at you in a way like that's not true or this couldn't happen or anything like that. Have you received anything like that? Have you received different comments from different things, from different people in different countries?
Yes, I have gotten different reactions from different people, primarily in the United States. One of the book clubs I talked with was a church-based book club, and there's the story itself brings into question certain things that are all taken as truth, but the book never says the opposite. So some of the characters think other things are going on, and they react in those ways, but the book itself doesn't. It just raises the question, what if bones and documents were discovered that people would think were the relics of Jesus of Nazareth? So it's not so much that the book has been attacked, but there have been people that have reacted negatively because I brought up that question, because the characters in the story are doing various things because it might in fact be relics of Jesus of Nazareth. So no horrible backlash, but certainly people have reacted to it in a negative way. No violence yet, nothing remotely like that.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because, when you dive into, subject matters like this, you have some very, very devout people who don't like when anything is kind of off the beaten path. I mean, you can see what happened, with Dan Brown and with the authors of, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and things like that nature. Did you have a feeling that you were going to write this book, or when you were in Turkey, did you decide that that's what you were going to do? How did that kind of come first? Was it the setting? Was it the idea? How did you kind of piece all that together from the beginning?
The idea came first. Just what if in an archaeological site something similar to this were discovered? What would that do? How would that be covered in the media? What would people from different backgrounds respond like? But it was when I got to Turkey the first time that I realized, in fact, it was the moment when I was standing at that St. John's archaeological site that I realized the whole story had to be there. The last part of the story ends in an area of Turkey called Cappadocia that not a whole lot of people have visited, but it's an area in which, and there's nothing really like it anywhere else in the world. The closest thing to it would be the Southwest United States, but what happened here was that for more than 1,000 years, cliff dwellers hollowed out spires and made homes and churches. It was a Christian area for 1,000 years, more than 1,000 years. And so a lot of the remaining caves are churches. And some of those churches have left paintings and other artifacts that really tell the story again of what happened to Jesus of Nazareth. So I had the characters in the story travel there, and they traveled there simply because one of the two most important characters, the archaeologist, had lived there and worked there as a young woman, and so she fled there with the artifacts because she knew it was one of the few places that she would be more comfortable with than those following her. And so the place is very much an important part of the story. I think of it as a character in the story, one of the more important characters. But the story did start with the question, what would happen if certain things were discovered at an archaeological site.
Now, and let's get into your characters, Sophia and Joseph here. How are they together? When you decided that you had the idea and you had to start building characters around, why Joseph and why Sophia?
Well, Sophia was easy because she is a Turkish-French archaeologist. Her father was Turkish and her mother French, and so she's carrying on the family tradition of archaeology. But I made her French-Turkish because the two cultures, there's a religious clash there, but the area in which she grew up, this part of Turkey around Izmir, is very much a cosmopolitan area. So she comes from both the Western and the Turkish culture. As far as Joe Travers goes, I needed an American who didn't quite get it. He's over there, but he's not someone who immediately understands the ramifications of what's happening. And so I made him a Midwesterner. I'm a Midwesterner. And he's a reasonably smart guy, but he doesn't get what everything that's happening until the story really unfolds. And I thought about having them become romantically involved, but in my reading, whenever that happens, the story sort of slows down and the romance sounds a little bit false because the people have just met each other, et cetera, et cetera. So I built a little tension in between them, and their friendship that develops is not a romantic friendship. And I think that really helped the story move forward because what mattered was what had been discovered at the archaeological site and how these people were responding to it. It wasn't a romance budding.
Yeah, and I kind of agree that I think that when you bring in those romantic elements and you do that, it kind of sometimes takes away from the essence of the story you're trying to tell, and people might start focusing on that relationship and maybe missing some of the other parts of the story. But now, was this supposed to be a standalone? Were you thinking of doing a series with the two of them, or did you not know and now you have a better idea after the book is done?
Good question. I definitely didn't know. I didn't think about it. I researched it and wrote it as a standalone. As I got to know some of the characters in the book, it takes me a while to really get to know them. I liked Sophia, obviously, and I liked Joe Travers, but I also came to like two other characters a lot. One is a young man by the name of Abraham, whose understanding of the world is very different from us. He's a brilliant archaeological student, but he's also something of a mystic. And he's Turkish. He doesn't really fit in because of his beliefs that go beyond where most of us are. But I came to like him quite a bit. I also came to like the Turkish official. He is a person who is in charge of all the archaeological sites, and his job is to make sure that what's going on at these sites is beneficial to Turkey. And so there's always a little tension between him and other characters. But I came to respect a great deal his point of view, that these are Turkish sites and that what is found at any of the sites belongs to Turkey. And he also is very much involved in supporting and helping the Turkish characters, and he's sort of he's not cynical, but he has a sense that these outsiders, there's an Austrian and a couple of Americans, that they're not really in it for whatever would benefit Turkey. They're in it for whatever other reasons they have. And I came to respect him. I didn't I was writing the book, and I don't now agree with some of his methods. He's a little bit, he reacts strongly to situations. But I did come to like him. And because I came to like those two characters, in addition to the main characters, it may well involve another story going forward. The other thing about it is that when I first visited Turkey, and it's still true now, I came to really like the parts of Turkey I've been in, which are the southwestern parts, Istanbul and the area around Izmir, and then Cappadocia, which is more central. And I also came to really like the Turkish people. They're incredibly nice, and they really are open to others. And that's not the view that Americans necessarily have at this historical moment. But this is my fourth time now in Turkey, and my experiences have all been very, very good. So the idea of setting another book here certainly is a possibility. I don't yet have a plan.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you said that, because I was going to ask, what kind of myth did you kind of debunk when you went to Turkey? Because, like I said, I think a lot of Americans, and I should say probably 97% of America, has probably never been to Turkey, and all they hear are maybe the bad stories that happen in the news or something to that effect. They don't go out and research. So I like it that you're able to say, you know what, you got to come here and see it for yourself and stop letting the two or three bad people in every country spoil how the people really are. Because my views, and I've been around in different places, is that most countries, I guess you want to say, they are extremely nice in general. Now, you do have some people within those countries that get all the news clippings, but that's not the way that they are. So I'm glad that you brought that up to kind of debunk some of those things about, you know, how Turkey has gotten bad raps in the past.
Yeah, and the other thing is that Turkey is a really large country. Those of us who have been to Europe a number of times think of Turkey as being sort of the size of one of the European countries, but it's far bigger. And this area in western Turkey, especially southwestern Turkey, has been both the cradle to civilization and, more importantly, really a crossroads. So there's lots of cultures that have come through here, and there's an openness to people that I think would surprise a lot of Americans. I'm over here now teaching teachers to teach English, and the teachers are really open to that. And English, for example, is becoming a more important language in Turkey, and that's something that probably a lot of Americans don't realize.
Now, so what's next for, you know, you as an author? Do you have, I know you're working on probably another book now. So is this going to kind of be the area that you're going to set yourself in? Are you going to be historical fiction-wise? Or are you going to jump and do something totally different because you have another story in mind? What can you tell us that's what's next for you?
Yeah, another good question. That's a problem for me because I have a draft of a story that's set mostly in Guanajuato, Mexico, which is another very historical place. And the history of it plays into that. And so what I'm balancing right now, today, November 1st, is whether to keep going with that story or whether to come back to another story in this area, because there's so many archaeological sites here and so much of early Western civilization played out in this in Asia Minor, in the area between the Middle East and Europe. So, and Istanbul, of course, was Constantinople for more than a millennium. So there's so much rich historical material here that I have to kind of decide sometime very soon whether to keep going with the one book or to start another one here. So I don't know. It's a great question because I can't answer it at this point.
Well, we have about 30 seconds left, so I want to give you the last word to kind of let everybody know where they can find you on social media, where the best place is to find information about you. Can you give them all those fun little areas where they can check out and see what you got going on?
Sure, that's great. I published this book through Amica Press, and so one way is to go through the Amica Press website. Probably the easiest way is to go to Amazon, because there are reviews on Amazon, and Amazon sells the book, obviously. And we have some links into other sites as well. But I'd appreciate anyone reading the story and then letting me know what he or she thinks about it, because the topic is one that is going to keep playing, and that is what actually happened 2,000 years ago and how that affects us today. And we see that playing all over the Middle East still and in parts of Europe and even in parts of the United States. So I think the topic will stay relevant. The story won't really go out of date.
Well, Jay, I want to thank you so much for coming out. It's been fascinating to talk with you about your book here, Bone Box. And I wish you good luck. Have fun in Turkey. And we will talk with you when you see what you got coming up next.
All right. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So again, everybody, that's author Jay Almberg, and you can check out his book. It's called Bone Box. You can find it now on Amazon. It's available. So go check that out. We also want to let you know about a couple other things. KensingtonBooks.com is another place to go to find some really great authors. Again, I've been pushing it and saying that if you want to go on Amazon and you're looking for a book, check out the publisher just as much as you check out the book. Let you know, you know, the publisher will let you know exactly going through the process, good books written, and how those things have gone through the process and how those things have been able to you. And it's check out KensingtonBooks.com and see everything they got going on from great authors, Lisa Jackson, Kevin O'Brien, and the list goes on and on and on. So make sure you look at them. 8 Films to Die For, the trailer is up on our website. I want you to check that out. Of course, Halloween was yesterday, but that doesn't mean the scary movies stop. It's more than one day of the year. So check out 8FilmsToDieFor.com. And lastly, Kevin Hurley with his book, Cut and Cover. Steve Barry, John Land love it. So you will love it too. Make sure you go to SilkReel.com for more information. And that's Kevin Hurley. And that is Cut and Cover. We are going to take a quick break. We are going to be back with our next guest, Robert Downs, and his book, La Cure's Destiny. Hopefully I said that correctly. And we will see you around the other side. Hold on. welcome back, everybody, here after the break. We want to thank Jay Omberg for being on with his book, Bone Box. And now we're going to shift gears. I just found out that I am the finale of Robert Downs' tour here with PartnersInCrimeTours.net. Check them out if you are interested in seeing what they have to offer and all the other tours that they have going on, because I don't get to speak to everybody, and they have a lot of other people that are on tour that you want to check them out and see what their books are about. So I'm glad that I'm the finale here for Robert coming up, so we're going to take him out with a bang. So, Robert, we want to thank you so much for coming on. How you doing?
Good. How about yourself, John?
Pretty good. Not too bad. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, but I'll tell you, with this hour change, it gets so damn bright in the morning. That's the one thing I don't like, is the brightness so early in the morning. I don't mind it getting dark at night early, but I don't like it getting so bright in the morning. I'm like, I don't wake yet. So that's, I'm not a big fan of that one, but you take the good with the bad, I guess. Let's jump in here to your book now, Le Coeur Destiny, and give us a little behind-the-scenes look into what you got going on.
Sure. So Sam Le Coeur, my main character, she's a female amateur sleuth, and I kind of think of her as like a monk or a Columbo. She has some OCD-like tendencies, and so she has a job as a forensic accountant, and she stumbles upon this, missing marketing lady in her office, and kind of starts poking around a little bit because she has a lot of, curiosity and everything, and, why has this lady been gone for a week? And so she starts digging into that a little bit, and so just kind of takes off from there. She's an interesting, fun character for me.
Now, when you decided that you were going to, get involved and write this, because this is a little different because you had a couple books out before this, and so you kind of switched gears and kind of done something a little different. What was the behind the scenes? Was it the character that kind of hit you that you needed to get her into a story, or was it the story in general and then you kind of wrapped the character around it? How did that kind of dynamic kind of work out first?
Well, it really all started with this character, and like you said, I'd written two hard-boiled mysteries, and I wanted to go in a completely different direction and challenge myself a little bit, and so I set out to write a cozy mystery. I didn't quite make it. I ended up with a female amateur sleuth, but I had some elements of the cozy in there, and for me, it really started with character. The first two hard-boiled mysteries, started with a character and a voice, and the same thing really happened with this one. I had a first line, and really it didn't. The first line in the novel really didn't change all that much throughout the drafts. I just, really liked that voice and that character, and so I just really took it off from there. And I really enjoyed Monk and this type of series and stuff. And so it was a lot of fun to explore this character a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you wanted to challenge yourself, and I know that when you're writing kind of hard-boiled mysteries and things like that, that, those can be extremely difficult because you got to make sure that you have a lot of things correct. You're not cheating the reader with clues and things like that. So what was the challenge for you? What was the stepping out of the box that you wanted to kind of get across, that you were looking to yourself, that you wanted to get into Le Coeur's Destiny?
Sure. Well, there's a couple challenges, I guess. One was trying to write the female character, and I wanted to make sure that I did that justice. And so I had my wife look at it at one point, and she looked at an early draft, and she was telling me all the things that were wrong with it, and it sounded too much like my original character. And I told her from the hard-boiled mysteries, and I told her, well, I was going to change all that in the next draft. And she's like, well, let me see the next draft. And so that was one of the major challenges. And then you brought up another one of, when you're writing a series of, having a certain set of characters in a certain world. And so I wanted to jump out of those characters in that world and, create an entirely different world. And hopefully I can make this one a series as well and kind of explore that world a little bit more.
So you do have plans. This is going to be a series. You've already kind of got things in the works then.
I do actually. One of the National Novel Writing Months, where you set out to write, 50,000 word novel in a month, which actually starts today. One of the ones a couple of years ago, I think actually I did a rough draft for this one, and so I want to go back and tweak that and improve upon that. And but yeah, and I don't. Sometimes it's difficult to make that distinction, but I think I can kind of figure out normally early on in a work if I'm, really enjoying it in that world and that type of thing, and if I decide there's, other areas to explore in that world, normally I decide pretty early on that, yeah, I'd really like to make this one a series if, if we can make it work. And other times I figured out pretty early on, it's like, okay, this is a standalone novel. This is, one story I want to tell in this world, and then I'm done. So.
And so did the challenge work? Did you, were you able to kind of quench that thirst, I guess you want to say, when you were done with the book here, LaCour's Destiny?
Yeah, I was happy with the finished product. Obviously, a lot of it goes to what the readers and what they think, and that'll certainly determine whether there are more books in the series or not. And but yeah, I really enjoyed the opportunity to explore, because she's a totally different character than the Hard-Boiled series. She's much more learning as she goes along, and much more trying to kind of figure things out, and brand new to all this, detective and sleuthing and everything, and writing the female character, trying to get that accurate. All that was a lot of fun for me. I really enjoyed all of that.
And so when, because the book has been out since August, and so you've been able to kind of have, some feedback. Everything, is always so instant on social media. Is there one kind of particular topic that you notice that a lot of people kind of talk about and want to know more about, and something that you're going to explore maybe in book two, which, whether there's a relationship or something to that effect?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think, because it's still a little bit early, I guess. Yep, but you're right. There have been a few reviews that come back in, and I'm trying to really figure out if, because nothing really stands out to me at the moment. I know some of the comments were, well, she's kind of maybe a little bit too new at this, or seemed like a little bit too new that she didn't really know what she was doing. But it's like, well, this is her first time, kind of, trying
Right, a
to,
little raw.
exactly. Yeah, that's thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. A little bit raw in that area and everything. So I plan to grow her a little bit with that whole sleuthing aspect and stuff. And so yeah, if that's the one comment that, or that's the one thing comment that really stands out in my mind, is related to her rawness. But that was the point, was that she was going to be, extremely raw in this area. So.
Yeah, and I think that, when you're going to write a series, and I just kind of look back, I didn't really read the series. My wife did, but she was always talking about, like, Janet Ivanovich and the Stephanie Plum. I mean, she went through doing what she was doing, and it was, she really didn't know what she was doing. I mean, she was kind of bumbling and stumbling and getting her way kind of through everything. So I think that, one of those things are, it'll be fun for readers to kind of see her grow. And I think it'd be fun for you to kind of see her grow. And I'm sure you probably already have plans into how that's going to maybe make that happen. And you might have other characters that you're going to be bringing in to help her out. But is there one character in particular that you want to keep moving on and exploring with that came out of LaCour's Destiny?
Yeah, I really like her best friend. They have, really good relationship, the two of them. And also she has a good relationship with her sister, and so I want to explore that a little bit more. And, she's still figuring out the whole guy thing, and going on to some dates that don't always turn out really well, and stuff like that. But yeah, I would say the best friend and the her sister, and then at some point, obviously down the road, there'll be a love interest, but that'll be a ways down the road. So.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, isn't it fun though? The kind of are these the kind of books that intrigued you when you were growing up? Are these the ones that you gravitated to? Kind of these kinds of more amateur sleuth kind of mysteries?
Probably a little bit, but I really read all over the map. I'll pretty much read just about anything from, mysteries to thrillers. I'll read some romance novels. I'll read even the occasional erotica novel, and I mean, I just, and we'll read just about anything that's out there. But it wasn't really so much maybe the female. I mean, sorry, the amateur sleuth type mysteries. I grew up reading like the Hardy Boys and that type of thing, and some of those stories and stuff. But yeah, so I would say there's a certain, just about any type of character that's interesting tends to intrigue me in voice and things.
Yeah, and I think that that's, I love the Agatha Christies and those types of things. I like being able to sit and figure things out. I like, doing puzzles and kind of, using my brain to kind of, move those things around. And I think that those, those kind of books, not only resonate with me, but I guess a connection, because that's what I kind of like to do in real life is, trivia and things like that. So when you're kind of building a character, do you kind of put those kinds of elements into them when you're deciding what you need to do and how you need to finish the book and get things through?
I try to. The bottom line is, you really want to make the characters, relatable to the readers and everything like that. And I think one of the things that probably helps with the amateur sleuth, mysteries is that they are really relatable. They're everyday people that end up solving a mystery for one reason or another. And yeah, the cops and detectives are great, but in some respects, it's maybe harder for folks to relate to them a little bit because they're in a different world than, or they operate in a different world than we do, and that type of thing. So I think maybe that helps the whole relatableness a little bit. But yeah, absolutely, I want to make sure that my characters end up being relatable to the readers, and so I try to put elements in there that are a little bit, quirky and different and unique and that, appeal to different types of readers.
Now let's talk a little bit about your, your two previous books that you had out, because, you said you had some hard-boiled mystery, and it was Falling Immortality and Graceful Immortality, so right there it kind of shows you that, yes, this is a series. Give us a little bit about that, though, just, so people kind of have an idea, maybe just to give you an idea of who you are as an author outside of your current book.
Sure, absolutely. So the first novel in the series, Falling Immortality, both of them, my main character, Casey Holden, he's a former detective, now a PI, and I really wanted to kind of I really like hard-boiled mysteries, and so I wanted to create a hard-boiled kind of world and hard-boiled voice. I don't know if I completely did the hard-boiled world, but I tried to capture some of that hard-boiled voice, and I think it kind of came through a little bit in the novels. And so the first novel, he's solving a 2-year-old cold case, and so he's the murder takes place in a bar, and so he's going through and going through all the facts and everything that happened with this case. It's now 2 years old, and it's kind of actually kind of funnily enough, I started out writing this and decided I wanted to, work on a cold case and everything because I thought it would be easier. And in the end, I figured out it's like, well, it's a lot more difficult if it's a cold case because he's trying to, take up these people and, recreate these facts from this murder that happened 2 years ago. And so actually there were some more challenges and stuff that came into play in doing that, and then, trying to tie that into, why is he looking at it now and everything, and so that makes it a little bit more difficult, I guess, and, innocently enough, I thought it was going to be easier to do it that way, but yeah, so that was the first novel, and then with the second novel, I put him in an entirely different world. A murder takes place at a dance studio, which I guess is kind of a little bit different place to maybe have a murder take place. But there's a dead dancer in the back corner of the parking lot, and that's the jumping-off point for this mystery. And him being a male and a little bit of a playboy PI, I dumped him in an atmosphere where he would feel kind of comfortable with a dance studio that has 12 out of 14 principal dancers that are female and everything, and so I dumped him in that world for the second mystery.
And now, when you're kind of looking forward and you're kind of figuring out, you know, the kind of writer that you want to be or the genre you want to sit in, have you kind of found where you want to go, or are you still going to maybe experiment a little bit until you maybe decide which path you want to go on? I mean, you know, we've seen authors like Dean Koontz start out with a lot of horror sci-fi, but then kind of move away from that in later books and things that, you know, Stephen King, even the same way, was a really, really horror person and kind of moved away from it. Now he's maybe getting back to it a little bit, but it's like you see authors kind of evolve themselves genre-wise, and so are you kind of going to explore that with yourself going forward?
That's the plan, really. I describe myself as probably being a little bit scatterbrained, and so I have just, like, I like reading in all these different genres, you know, general fiction, you know, whatever, and so the plan is, I really like mysteries and thrillers, and so I'll continue to come back to those, but the plan is to jump off, like, my next novel will come out next year will be a thriller, and then eventually I want to gravitate toward a little bit of general fiction, and then certainly come back to the mystery and thriller genre. I think it'll be one of those things where I'll explore outward, but, you know, kind of use that as my base, the mysteries and thrillers, and come back to those certainly a lot, because that's where I do the majority of my reading, but I also read in all these other genres, and so I want to explore some other genres as well, maybe even some humor or something. We'll see. But
yeah, that'd be interesting. I mean, it's always good, I think, you know, like you said, when you wanted to challenge yourself, I think it's always important that an author continues to challenge themselves. Otherwise, you know, you just become stagnant, and I think you become boring. And I think that that's the one thing that, of course, when you're writing in this genre, you never want to be as boring. You always want to make sure that you continue to try to move the needle, even if sometimes you move the needle in a really weird direction, as long as you're just, you know, keeping things moving. I think that that's important. And I think that that's something that, you know, a lot of authors forget about doing when they continue to write. I think they get stagnant. So, yeah, that's good that you're going to try to keep, you know, yourself fresh.
Yeah, that's the key, right, is, you know, I don't want to be bored writing this stuff because that would be really bad, because that would mean exponentially on the other side that readers are absolutely bored reading it, and so I don't want that to happen at all, and so I want to continue to, as you said, kind of challenge myself, you know, push that envelope a little bit, you know, explore something, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but I want to continue to try that and see what happens, and hopefully I'll drag some readers along the way, so...
Drag him. Well, let's not say drag him. That could be a bad
thing. Well, that's true.
Drag him. Yeah, you know, that's kind of like behind the bumper of the car. I just think of Vacation, the poor little dog. We don't want that to happen. But I kind of get what you mean. Now, where are you from? Do you kind of set your books in the area that, you know, that you grew up and you raised? Or is it something that, you know, you'd like to do something, you know, you don't do that because you just, you know, you don't want to talk about that, or you wanted to explore something else?
Well, I'm originally from West Virginia, and so I do have an idea for...
Oh, close to my neck
of
the woods. I'm from Ohio. So I'm familiar with that area, yeah, because I'm from Ohio, yeah.
Very cool. But yeah, so I do have an idea for a novel, and I've written, I think, most of a rough draft at this point for it, because I wanted a certain type of novel if I was going to set it in West Virginia, because there's certain novels that would work, you know, better than others, obviously, and so I had an idea for a novel, and I'm going to set one there, but at this point, most of my novels are set in Virginia Beach, in that area where I spent about 5 years after I, you know, was born and raised and graduated from college in West Virginia, and then moved out to the Virginia Beach area and took my first job with the Air Force, and so at this point, most of my novels are set there. I have a novel that I'm trying to finish up here that's set in Boston, which was the next place that I lived, and I have a novel that I'm working on that'll be set in Albuquerque and where I live next, and at some point I'll probably set some novels in California, but I tend to work from the perspective of after I leave a place, I'll write about it normally, not necessarily while I'm there. It's just kind of a little quirk of mine, I guess, but
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I've been to Virginia Beach once. My father was in the Air Force, and so I kind of went around to a couple of the things. I was not an Air Force person. I mean, he was already kind of out of active duty. He was in the reserves. But I remember going to Virginia Beach, and I remember that that was a really nice area. And, of course, from Ohio, I've, you know, been to West Virginia many times. And there's a lot of settings in West Virginia that, that you could do there that can be really creepy. Because I guess West Virginia is the one state that Ohio people are allowed to make fun of. That's about all we got, maybe that in Kentucky. But there's not much more than that that Ohio people can make fun of. So, and I think that West Virginia is one of those states that, you know, kind of gets a bad rap. I mean, I've been to the University of West Virginia. It's a beautiful campus. It's in a nice area. But it has a lot of older industrial parts, like a lot of those areas in the Northeast and Pennsylvania and places like that. I think Pittsburgh is about the only city that's actually made itself out of that realm of all those steel things and become more technology-driven and a little bit more forward-thinking. So, yeah, you got a lot of plot twists and things that can go on around that West Virginia area for sure.
Yeah, no, you're right, absolutely. And it's one of those states and kind of flies under the radar a little bit. And when I first moved to Virginia Beach, one of my colleagues that I was working with said, well, it's a good place to be from. And it was one of those things that, you know, maybe you take it slightly personally initially, but then you start thinking about it and it's like, well, yeah, no, he's right. It's a good place to grow up. It's, you know, it's great as far as outdoors activities and,
yeah.
And it's, you know, filled with small towns. And so it's, you know, just a place, you know, a great place to grow up and, you know, go to school and that type of thing and stuff. So yeah.
Now,
so
you go to
right.
a lot of, and do you go to a lot of conferences? Do you go to a lot of things to learn about the writing craft and stuff like that? Or do you not really, you know, you kind of shy away from that, I guess, a little bit.
I do. I really enjoy, you know, learning about the craft and, you know, wanting to grow as a writer and improve. And so I'm always, you know, seeking out those types of things. And so I do the annual Boucher Con mystery convention, and then I also do the Lovecraft
Crime. Oh, you were
just
in Raleigh?
Out here. I was.
You just went to Raleigh. Oh, cool.
But, yeah, and then I also come back. It's about every 2 or 3 years I'll come back to West Virginia University, and they have an annual workshop, you know, writing workshop and stuff like that. And that's a great way to kind of, again, learn more about the craft, dive in even deeper in that type of setting. And they also have these critique groups, which are extremely helpful to me. And I've brought back different pieces that I'm working on, you know, trying to see if they work or not. And it's interesting some of the feedback you get from some of the other writers. And there are groups of about, you know, 9 or 10 folks and stuff. And so it's great to get that feedback and see. It's like, okay, this is working. And, you know, continue on with this. And actually, LaCour's Destiny was one that I brought there. And they're like, well, yeah, this sounds like a female character. You're doing a good job. You know, keep going with it. And so I did. And so, but yeah, so that's a great way to grow and improve as a writer or doing those types of things.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I'll tell you, we got about a minute left here, Robert. It's been fascinating to talk to you, but I want to kind of give you the last word, like I always like to do, to where you can let people know where they can find you and find more information about you. So I will leave it up to you. So hit it up.
Sure, absolutely. So one of the first places you can go and a great place to go and learn some information about me is my website, and it's robertdowns.net. Also, another great avenue I try to poke on there once or twice a week is Facebook, and that is facebook.com, and it's /Robert Downs Books. And certainly you can go to my you know, publisher's website, Oaktree Books.com, and check me out there as well. But those are some good places to check me out.
Oh, again, Robert, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been fabulous to talk to you. Wish you nothing but the best. Good luck moving forward. And keep us up to date on what's happening in the series.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on here, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So again, everybody, that is author Robert Downs. The book is called LaCour's Destiny, LaCour's Destiny. And make sure that you go check that out. We want to thank everybody for coming on. Of course, we always want to thank partnersincrimetours.net for using us as a tour stop. It's great to be able to speak with you. You want to make sure that you check out and see our schedule because we are going to have a little makeshift one coming up like we always do around December. Like to take that month off and then kind of recharge ourselves for January. So look for that. It'll be a little spotty here and there. And, of course, make sure you always check out all the other shows we had on. A fabulous one on Friday with the Story Blender and a great conversation with author Gail Linz. Well, in honor of Halloween, because we weren't able to be with you last night, we are going to leave you guys all with this. And, of course, like we always say, keep on reading. Until next time, everybody, see you later.